Hi, sweet souls. Welcome to I'm Awake, Now What? A podcast about life, love, laughter, and enlightenment. I'm your host, Krista Ziomata. Rack up some good karma by leaving a 5-star rating and write a review if you're enjoying this podcast and tell your friends about it. I am bursting at the seams today to be sitting down with the Mike Dooley. Mike is a co-founder of Toot. He's a New York Times bestselling author, global speaker, and entrepreneur. He was featured in the groundbreaking movie, The Secret, and is one of the most influential spiritual teachers of our time. His notes from the universe have become an affirming daily staple for anyone living in alignment with their soul's purpose and consciously creating. Mike tells us about his religious upbringing and how at the tender age of 10, he began to ask deep questions and relied on his curiosity as a guiding light on his own journey. Mike walks us through the evolution of his life and defines his personal religion that includes everyone and everything. Mike closes by drawing our attention to the miraculous nature of the ordinary and how to trust your life journey, knowing you will always be led to the answers you seek.
Hi, it's Mike Dooley.
Hi, Mike Dooley. This is Krista.
Hi, Krista. How are you? Thanks for having me. Let's do it.
All right. So my first question for any podcast guest that comes on is just to calibrate with our audience. I think everyone should probably know who you are, but just in case they don't, could you give a quick introduction of who you are and what you do?
Sure. A pretty conventional guy from what was the mainstream, if you will. Mm-hmm. Although I speak exclusively on spiritual matters, my background is certified public accountant, and I did that for 6 years with Pricewaterhouse, entrepreneur for 10 years in a family business selling t-shirts, and that led to the last 19 years being a writer, speaker, and teacher on the nature of reality. A pretty unpredictable chain of events led me here. But now I'm known for my notes from the universe that go out every day of the week, and 17 books on living deliberately, creating consciously, 4 world tours, and a whole bunch of other stuff in between.
Amazing. Yeah, you've had such a beautiful career. It's been really nice to watch from the outside, see all of the things that you're doing. So thank you for being such a beautiful light in the world and giving us so much content to marinate in and also evolve with. So I'm so grateful that you do what you do.
Thanks.
The basis of this podcast is around people who are starting out on the spiritual path. And I like to ask all of my guests if they could kind of walk me through, like, what was their early childhood experience with, like, God, religion, or spirituality? And fast forward us to where they are now.
Okay, excellent. I think that's so appropriate. Because if we don't ask, if we don't take stock, if we just kind of shrug it off like everybody has their own truth, we throw our power out the window. And,
right.
and it is not reasonable to say everyone has their own truth. What's more accurate is everyone has their own path to the truth. But the truth is not movable. It is not adjustable. It's not sometimes this and sometimes that. It's very benign. It's very simple. We are of God, by God, pure God. We are divine creators. We are eternal beings. Our thoughts become things, full stop. That's my religion. And I am not of a religion. I was raised a Catholic, had a lot of questions. A lot of things did not reconcile, as anyone who's asked questions within a religion would have to admit. A lot of beauty in Catholicism, a reverence and respect for life, an acknowledgement that there's a higher source. But then, you know, just to be blunt, in my opinion, the whole thing was hijacked by men who wanted power and to manipulate the masses. And it takes a very discerning person to say what here makes sense and serves us and what doesn't. And my litmus test has become, in the last 2 decades, you know, if I'm considering, is this truth, you know, don't eat popcorn on a Wednesday night. Does this potential truth, or, you know, of a sea of potential truths that are we are presented with as quote unquote gospel, does it speak of life's beauty or of our power and leave no one behind, whether they accept it or not, whether they've sinned so-called or not? You know, you can't have paradise for one group of people based on one agenda, one school of thoughts, and not for the other people. That's a red flag on the plate. We're not dealing with truth. So does it empower? Does it speak of life's beauty? Does it include everyone, no matter what? And then we're probably speaking truth. But it was a long time before I whittled it down to such a simple kind of idea. So in the beginning, since no one in the church nor in my family could answer the simple basic questions of like, why would God fry people. It doesn't make sense if he's loving, quote unquote, mm-hmm. and a million other questions. I started drawing my own conclusions. And you know, we're not told to do that. We're not told to trust ourselves. We're told to look outside of ourselves for truth, to read mm-hmm. more books, get more education, go anywhere but within is what we're raised under. Because how could you possibly know unless you can touch it, taste it, smell it, etc. But I drew my own conclusions, and I remember literally as a boy telling my mother that, you know, God had to be in everything, because how could there be non-God, that everyone had to go to heaven because everyone was doing the best that they knew how to do, that time, space, and matter had to be illusions because our lives on a timeline don't matter at all, not even close, couldn't possibly matter. But we know our lives do matter. But yet on the timeline, they do not matter. They're absolutely immaterial, insignificant to eternity, you know, either way. And so these little things I was able to deduce in my boyhood, you know, 10 to 12 years old. And then I started to seek around the fringes. I would get books, although I've mm-hmm. never been an avid reader, but books on ESP, telepathy, mind power, creative visualization, UFOs, Bigfoot, you know, anything yeah. on the fringe, because that hinted towards more, mm-hmm. more than what we've been sharing, what people have told us, what is on the nightly news. I mean, there's nothing in any of these places. And I would always light up. And then I was 18, 19 when my mom sent me the Seth material dictated by the late Jane Roberts. It's channeled work. I told her she had lost it. I was worried about her. She said, forget where it came from, read what Seth has to say. I did, and nothing has ever been the same. Seth is this disincarnate being that has to sound wacky and ridiculous to anybody from the mainstream today, but I would say the same. What does Seth say? And Seth has zero agenda. He's not upselling anything. There's no video courses or retreats. Seth says that we are all of God, by God, pure God. Our focus creates our fortunes, just like we said in The Secret, mm-hmm. on the Law of Attraction. Seth said that we are eternal creators, that we're here by choice, that everything's working out just fine, which doesn't excuse the hideous and the ugly, which does take place on planet Earth. Mm-hmm. Seth discounted religions, and he put an emphasis on, you know, the sanctity of the individual and their pursuit for happiness. That's Seth in a nutshell, and it confirmed my own inner suspicions, and he provides a lot more and went farther than I could ever go on my own. And then suddenly my life was about living these great truths, evidenced everywhere in our experiences. No matter how ordinary we are, we still have psychic experiences, mm-hmm. we still have premonitions, we still have dreams come true, we still prevail over adversity. Not to say there's no bumps in the road for all of us, that's part of life's learning. But everything was evidenced by our lives that Seth said. So for me, from my middle college years, it was all about using these truths vis-a-vis affirmations, creative visualization, doing some inner work, going within, sorting out my beliefs to get rich, to be happy, to be loved and love. And it was like, I want to have the greatest life possible. And it was purely selfish interest. And there's nothing unspiritual about that, that led me further down this path of truth to be very successful as a certified public accountant with Pricewaterhouse, and then to be very successful as an entrepreneur with my mother and brother. And then in the last 19 years, truly the life of my wildest dreams as a teacher of metaphysics, mm-hmm. writing notes from the universe, traveling all over the world, literally, frequently, Africa, Asia, Europe, South America, Tahiti, Hawaii, wherever, whenever I want to go, with audiences showing up, grateful audiences. We jam on Living Deliberately and got my books, and this stuff really, really, really works. And as my life has gone full circle in my search for truth, number one, while I will never know everything with a mortal brain, mm-hmm. all of the key questions are answered. Life is the ultimate knowable to the degree you can be happy and get your groove on living deliberately.
Right.
And number two, now that so much has worked in my life and I have so much, it's exhilarating and thrilling to be of service and to teach and to help and to bring everyone onto the path of truth, because there's enough for everyone to be happy and in love with their life.
Yeah, what a beautiful explanation of your life story. Thank you for going into such great detail there. I had a similar experience, not the same, but I did grow up Catholic as well, and my curiosity was squelched for a very long time. And I like what you said about when you were reading Seth, because when I went on my own journey as well, the thing that resonated the most for me, I read a lot of texts, but was Buddha's in his experience. And it's like when you hear the truth for the first time, it's so eye-opening, and it's like it does resonate beyond like your own human experience, and you're like, oh, this feels so real to me. And it sounds like that's what the Seth, you know, reading his works was that same experience,
right? You light up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I knew it. Oh my God, life is awesome. We are powerful.
Yeah, I love that.
It's come true. Yeah, it's a good thing. It's a joy thing. It's not selfish living. You know, the truth is liberating and empowering and fun.
Yeah.
And hence the notes in the universe, which are fun.
Yeah, they're amazing. Well, and I think to your point through your whole trajectory is that part of living a life in your own truth and uncovering the universal truth is that it isn't selfish, because the most selfless thing we can do is to go inward. And we can't heal the world, and we can't help other people, and we can't give our right gifts unless we go internal to experience and cultivate those things within us. And that's definitely been a theme in my own journey, and really removing the idea of seeking the external and going inward. It sounds so simple, but for some reason, people still struggle with that idea. If everyone did it, we'd be in such a different place as a global society, I think.
I agree.
Yeah.
Well said.
So my next question was, I followed you for so many years, and you kind of touched on your zest for curiosity, and I feel like you've answered a lot of the big questions, and I wondered if you could give any advice to somebody who's just scratching the surface, maybe getting out of their inner circle where everyone's thinking the same way, or maybe leaving their religion of origin, or maybe just dipping their into spirituality. What can we say to them about honing their own curiosity and trusting their intuition that they will find the answers they're looking for?
Gosh, I would say you're on the right path. You know, anybody who's asking questions, where too often some have not made progress is they didn't ask of themselves. Ask yourself, does this make sense that God would send his children to hell if they didn't ask for a break? Does it make sense that bad things would happen in a world that is pure 100% God? Now, I know that's a very tricky one, but there are answers for that. And I want everybody to ask, does it make sense that bad stuff happens? If so, does that mean God made a mistake? Why isn't there a stopgap measure preventing violations? Or could it be that there's a greater context to all that happens? And while we can't see it sometimes, like, why would somebody allow themselves to be in harm's way as a child, for example? But just because we can't see it doesn't mean it's not there. You know, they're not just a child. They're an ancient spiritual gladiator of love and joy. And maybe they chose to be in harm's way so that others would not be in harm's way. Maybe they chose to be in harm's way for the effect it would have on those who love them as they sought truth and sought liberation, as we all do, from dogma, whether we realize it or not. That everything has an answer, and the answer always ends up with love and beauty and order, even though we often see so much chaos. And don't necessarily try to tackle the most vexing, challenging circumstances of our time. You know, as I pursued it in the beginning, let it be about you. Anybody listening right now would surely and readily admit that the easier and better and richer and healthier they become, and I mean financially richer, the better off their loved ones will be, because they're going to share it. They're going to be an inspiration. They're going to feel a sense of confidence and buoyancy that's going to be contagious.
Yeah.
And so nobody should be out there putting the needs of others before their own. I know that sounds horrible to the religious minded. I was taught for 18 years that I should be living that way. But I don't believe we came here to not be us.
Right.
And being us means taking care of ourselves. It means following our hearts. My mom would say all the time, charity begins at home. Whether you're helping out financially, or you're helping out with courage or with confidence or peace of mind. And, you know, like many teach the analogy of putting on your mask on an airplane filling mm-hmm. up with smoke. You do that first before you help the children you're with. Because if you try to help them, you run the risk of both of you dying. Whereas if you right. can get yourself breathing quicker, even though somebody might say, well, that's selfish. You're saving yourself, but not your kids. You can't save your kids if you don't save yourself. And nor are you going to be a good teacher of love and joy and patience and tolerance and celebrating and seeing life's majesty for others if you can't authentically do it yourself. And that means follow your heart, be happy, do what you love, not at the expense of anyone. That's too often what selfishness is defined to mean. Mm-hmm. But I would counter the true selfishness is a virtue, as has been written by others, because true selfishness means you will automatically be looking out for loved one. Doing anything less is ultimately going to come around and blow up in your face. And how selfish are you if you're burning your bridges to a point where those you love are going to be devastated and heartbroken and perhaps no longer in your life? That's not selfishness. That's spiritual stupidity. A spiritual saint will automatically follow their own heart while being aware of the ramifications for those that depend on them and those they love. And that doesn't mean not following your dreams. It means doing so in a prudent way and at the right time with all things considered.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of responsibility in taking up this path. And part of that responsibility is also owning our own reactions and our own mm-hmm. interactions with our family and our friends. And that's part of being conscientious and loving and coming from that place of love that you're talking about. I think that's a really good point that you made.
Yeah, exactly.
Sweet soulers, I am over the moon about this new app I just downloaded called Saged. Saged is the go-to app for all things spiritual. For all my moon babes out there, Sage has you covered with moon rituals, divine feminine work, inner healing, crystals, and even sacred sexuality practices. Sage is a community-focused app bringing together like-minded individuals who want to expand their spiritual practices. You get all the information and tools you need to keep your daily practices going and meet some really amazing people at the same time. Sage can be found and downloaded from your iPhone and Android app stores. Download it today. So I wanted to talk about, for anyone that doesn't know, but they better just like hang up this podcast now and just go sign up for your notes from the universe. You write these beautiful notes from the universe that come to our inbox every day that are tied to our own intentions about our lives and are often tied to those in such a synchronistic and I think sacred way. I feel like I've never received a note from you that wasn't exactly what I needed to hear in every single day.
Aww.
I'm so grateful. If you just only did your notes, that would be amazing, but I know you do more. But I wanted to talk about them because the first place I ever learned about the weight of my thoughts was with Maya Angelou. She says, you know, that our words can stick on walls and in our clothes and on the little crooks and crannies of our carpet, and that it's important yeah. for us to choose our words with intention and positive regard for others. And so after I'd read that from her, I subsequently and synchronistically came upon your book. I think the first one I read was Leveraging the Universe, and you you took it a step further for me. And I feel like you really taught me that I had agency over my thoughts so that I could create a better life for myself. And I wondered if you could talk about the weight of thoughts and why it is important for us to choose the good ones.
Sure. The little catchphrase that I'm most pleased that's been attached to me is thoughts become things. I said that in The Secret, the DVD and the book, and I was saying it for a decade prior to The Secret. That originated from a t-shirt design, believe it or not. Warning, thoughts become things. Choose them wisely. And I remember when I was in the t-shirt business, and I was basically the author of a lot of t-shirts over 10 years. My brother did the designs, I did the writing, and they were usually of a metaphysical nature. I remember working on a poem that was going to speak to the power of our thought. You know, they were cute little rhyming poems, like picture in your mind all that you may be, and with a little time you will come to see that in the game of life your dreams will come alive by thinking of the end result as if it had arrived. So that was one. So I was working on another one, and in pages and pages of attempt, I noticed and I circled three words that I had strung together, thoughts become things. And I knew and know, and this is not unique to me, that our focus, where we place our attention, is where things start to brew and change and morph and get mixed up. Literally, you know, we create our own reality, and we do so by our focus in thought, which can be reinforced by our words, which can be super reinforced by our behavior and actions. But it's the nucleus of everything. And I wrote Thoughts Become Things on these reams of paper, trying to come up with a cute poem about the power of our thoughts. And I remember it was kind of a light bulb, lightning bolt moment when it was like, oh God, you know, I don't think it could be said any more efficiently than that. Thoughts become things. I don't think I could whittle that down to two words where it would be cohesive and complete. And I think to this day, maybe in no language does the essence of our place in the universe lie better than stating thoughts become things, our thoughts.